This presentation is brought to you by iAwaken.org, a not-for-profit organization. We hope you enjoy the presentation. Please observe the copyright terms to which you have agreed.
An alternative title could be Quality and Quantity. And what we're going to do this evening is we're going to analyze the role of quantity in Torah. We're then going to analyze the relationship between quality and quantity in Torah, and then we're going to discuss how one achieves that relationship in Torah. Because the dehumanizing process of the human being results from a confusion between quality and quantity. The Sefer Bamidbar opens with a mitzvah to count the Bnei Yisrael. And the Midrash notices two different phrases used. One in the case of Bnei Yisrael in general, one in the case of the people of Israel in general, and a different phrase used in the case of the Levim. In the case of Bnei Yisrael in general, the phrase that is used is Su'u es Rosh Bnei Yisrael, which literally means uplift the heads of the Bnei Yisrael. In the case of the Levim, it's Ach es Matei Levi Loisifkoid. The people of the numbers of the Bnei Levi, the members of the house of Levi, shall not be counted together with Bnei Yisrael. And here it uses a different phrase, Tifkoid, which literally means visit them, but could also mean number them.
Omer Rabbi Pinchas Baridi, says Rabbi Pinchas Baridi in the Medrash. Moksiv Beroisha Sefer, what does it say in the beginning of the Sefer? Su'u es rosh kol adas b'nei Yisrael. Uplift the heads of all of b'nei Yisrael. Roimim es rosh, gadol es rosh, loinem.
Note, says the Medrash, that the Torah does not choose the term gadol es rosh or roimim es rosh. Gadol es rosh means enlarge the heads of the people. Roimim es rosh means exalt the heads of the people.
Elos u'es rosh. The Torah uses the term uplift the heads of the people.
What is the difference? What's disturbing the Medrash? One point that disturbs the Medrash we'll see in a moment, but on the surface already. Su'u is a very physical action. Su'u means literally lift up. Gadel means make big. Now making big doesn't necessarily mean physically. We talk about a godel. What do we mean? When we talk about a godel, we're not talking about a giant. When we talk about a godel, we're talking about a great man with a great intellect, with great character. So the word godel does not necessarily mean physically big. Roimeim means specifically non-physically. When we talk about exalting something or someone, we're not talking about it physically there, we're specifically talking about it spiritually. Su'u, when you talk about lifting something, it's a particular phrase which sounds very literal, which sounds very physical.
And the Medrash goes on to say, Ke'odom ha'omer l'kostigar. It's almost as if a man is talking to an executioner and he says, Savrei she'diplan,
lift this man's head off. There's a connotation of negativity. There's a connotation of decapitation rather than uplifting.
Kach no san remes, so says the Medrash, this was intended to be an ominous hint of what might, a foreboding intimation of what might yet occur. Su'u es rosh she'im yizku ya'alu ligdulo. If Bnei Yisrael will merit it, they will become great in the desert. Kamad seima, as it says, Yiso paro es roshecho v'hishivecho al konecho. Im lo yizku yomusu kulo. And if they don't merit it, they will all die.
Except the Shevet of Levi. The Shevet of Levi didn't die, you remember. And that's why that phrase of Su'u es Rosh is not used in connection with the tribe of Levi. Only with a general Bnei Israel who in fact didn't make the Torah Israel. So there is a connectedness between the use of this phrase which implies decapitation and the fact that in reality they landed up dying before they got to Israel.
This double entendre and the meaning of the word Yiso es Roshcho,
meaning literally lifting up a head, or lifting off a head, and meaning figuratively
raising, elevating, exalting, has already been played upon by the Torah in a previous occasion. And that was the famous scene with Yosef in the jail and the butler and the baker, which is what the Medrash refers to. When you remember, the butler is looking a little perplexed one day. Yosef is doing his rounds, sees the perplexity on the butler's face, says, "What is it, my friend?" Answers the butler, "I had a disturbing dream and I don't understand it." Says Yosef, "Tell me the dream, maybe I can help you." Answers the butler, "Had this dream, big vine, three branches, in full blossom, the bunches of grapes, the bunches full with grapes, ripe with grapes, and in my hand the cup of paro, and I was squeezing the wine into the cup." Says Yosef, "Good. The three branches, that's 3 days. In another 3 days, Yisro paro es roshecho v'hishivecho al kunecho." That pasuk which the Medrash quoted. Paro will lift up your head and put you back in your position. That's what it will be. Through all this, the baker was there too. And the baker was a bit of a cynical fellow. He didn't think much of this dream interpretation business until he heard the interpretation. When he heard such an optimistic interpretation, when one's in a situation like that, in a jail in Egypt, you grab at any straw. And he also had three in his dream, so he thinks the dreams are rather similar. So his cynicism vanishes, his eyes begin to sparkle, and he jumps forth and says to Yosef, "I also had a dream." "What's your dream, baker?" "Three baskets on my head, bread and meal products in all of the baskets. On the top basket there was the most delicious baked products, and birds were eating from the top basket from off my head." Says Yosef, savoring every moment of the ironic suspense and using it to full theatrical effect, "Yes," he says, "the three baskets, 3 days." And you can imagine the Sarah Uthim ready, the baker getting all excited, and his pupils becoming dilated, and he can hardly hold on to his seat. And he says, "Yes, go on." He says, "Barayit shleisha yomim, you know what will happen in another 3 days? Yisro paro yisroishacho. You too, paro is going to lift your head, meyolecho, from off you and hang you on a gallow." That's what he's going to do. Playing with that same phrase, yisro esroishacho. Uplifting and offlifting. Disturbingly close in their meanings.
What's all that got to do with counting? Counting people has exactly the same duplicity of effect on individuals. When you count somebody, you can uplift him, and when you count somebody, you can decapitate him. It has the same effect. The decapitating effect, we don't have to look far back in history to see one of the most barbaric examples of that. The stamping of the numbers on the inmates of the concentration camp. That was part of the process of dehumanizing them. To do what came afterwards, you had to dehumanize them first. People aren't capable of barbaric deeds on that scale to other people whom they consider humans. It is necessary, before you can become destructive, it is necessary to dehumanize them. And one of the methods that the Nazis used of dehumanization was to attach a number to each individual. That's in recent history. But one can go to far more contemporary times to see the same effects, although not quite so extreme. Bank account numbers, patients in hospitals, citizens on a voter's roll, identity document numbers. More and more, as computers have become the way of life, names are being replaced with numbers. And now you phone up and you say, "This is so-and-so." People say, "What's your number?" Ah, then they know who they're talking to. Name doesn't mean anything. Number? Yeah. Number really means a great deal. It's a terribly dehumanizing experience. We don't feel it, we're getting used to it. But that's the worst thing, that we're getting used to it. That means we're getting used to feeling unimportant as human beings. We're becoming statistics on a computer screen, on a printout, and we are related to in that way, and we're beginning to accept it. Very dangerous when that starts happening. We start accepting it in ourselves, and we start accepting it in others. And when people become numbers, when people become statistics, then barbaric acts are quite possible. Then one can do anything. One can play around, one can manipulate, one can dominate, you can do what you want with statistics. It's only when the other person is a human being that you've got to be a little careful, and that your feelings don't allow you to do those kind of things. And so, when Moshe is instructed to count the people,
The phrase that is used is su'u es roshon, suggesting to Moshe, be careful how you do it. You've got to count them. But in so doing, you can destroy their humanity or you can elevate their humanity. Do it in the proper way. What is the proper way? We know from earlier sedras, the proper way is they used to give half a shekel. Everybody used to give a coin, and the coins were counted. That's okay. Why is that not dehumanizing? To count the people is dehumanizing. To count the coins is not dehumanizing. It's the same thing after all. Who are we fooling? It's not the same thing. When you're counting the coins, you're counting people's contribution. And the Torah teaches us that quantification of contributions, that's the correct way to value and to evaluate a person's contribution. When you're dealing with a human being himself, then we don't deal with quantities and we don't deal with statistics. I went to my bank manager once and I wanted a much bigger overdraft. So he said, but I can't. I said, why not? He said, your figures. It doesn't justify it. I said, well, you stop looking at figures. You're talking to a human being. Do you suspect I'm going to run away with the money? He says, no. I said, do you suspect that I'm not going to repay you at the agreed time? He says, no. I said, have I ever not repaid you at an agreed time before? He says, no. So I said, so what's the problem? Do you want letters of recommendation? He says, don't help. I said, why not? He said, I'm a figures man. I've got to look at figures. It makes no difference who you are. You can be a crook or you can be an honest person. The figures is what we look at. And I went out feeling very dejected until I learned this medrash. He's right. When you're measuring a business, you use scientific criteria. Then it's figures. Then it's statistics. Then it's quantity. When you're measuring a person's contribution, you use statistics. You use quantity. That's a measure of his success. And we mustn't try and fool ourselves into some airy, fairy existential method of evaluating our success in other terms. At the end of the day, it has to be quantified. What is it quantified in every field? It's that. You've learnt a bit of Gemara. At the end of the day, the question is, how much Gemara do you understand? Not how much have you learnt. That's irrelevant. How much Gemara you understand? But you've got to be able to say, I understand from here to here. That's physical quantification. That's dimensions. True. When you're talking about a person's productivity, when you're talking about his contribution, you've got to talk about it in physical terms, in statistical terms. Person gives tzedakah. The question is, how much tzedakah did he give? That's what's relevant. Not necessarily in an objective sense, as we discussed, I think, only last week. Sometimes a person who gives a smaller amount of tzedakah is stretching himself much more than somebody who gives a big amount. If a millionaire gives 20,000 rand to tzedakah a year, that's not a lot of money. If a little fellow who's battling and is struggling and he gives 2,000 rand a year, and that really comes out of Mesiras Nefesh, he's got a sacrifice at home for that 2,000 rand a year, that's worth much more in terms of the mitzvah tzedakah. But at the end of the day, you're talking quantities. How much did he earn? How much did he give? What is the relationship? What is the ratio between his earnings and his giving? That's how you measure the tzedakah. At the end of the day, that's the only way you can measure it. So when we're talking about contributions, the Torah teaches us there's nothing wrong with counting. On the contrary, you elevate a person. That's Yisro es Roshcho. That's how you elevate him. When you count his contribution, you make him feel that his contribution is worth something, that it's part of something, that it's important. That's the elevation of a human being. But when you count the human being himself, that's not. Then you dehumanize, then you're decapitating the human being. And in fact, that's how Yosef himself knew that the Saramashkim was going to live and the Sarah'ifim was going to die. What is the difference between those two dreams? The butler dreamt about productivity. He dreamt about a growing vine, vital, dynamic, with blossoms, with bunches of grapes, ripened. And he's active. What is he doing? He's taking the grapes and squeezing them into the cup of Pharaoh. He is converting the agricultural product into something usable, into something drinkable. He's industrious, he's productive. Yosef sees life in that dream. The Sarafim? Nothing, no life? Baskets of bread. The dream doesn't involve the baking of the bread. The dream doesn't involve the manufacture of the bread, the serving of the bread, nothing. The only bit of life in the picture painted by the baker's dream are the birds on the top basket.
and birds aren't to be found where human beings are dynamic. Where human beings are vital and active, you don't find birds. That's what scarecrows are all about. You only find birds where human beings are dead. Then the birds come. And so in Yosef's dream, in the baker's dream, Yosef sees death and he sees sterility. He sees a lack of dynamics. So, U.S. Resh, when you're talking about physically elevating, and you're talking about elevating something physical, a contribution, that's a valid term. And the elevation that Yosef saw in the dream of the Sarah Mashkim was an elevation of productivity, that means life. But when you take a dead person and you elevate him, what happens? If you take a live person and you lift up his head, what happens? His body follows. And the more you elevate a person's mind, the higher his whole being goes. But if you take a dead person, you try and elevate his mind, what happens? You stretch the neck muscles a little bit, you strain the spine, and eventually you break his neck, and the head comes off. That's what hanging is. And Yosef sees the Sarah Mashkim, the Sarah Ufim, the baker, there's nothing you can do with him. He's already dead. And any elevation of his head is only going to lead to decapitation. And so he tells him in 3 days' time, his head is going to be lifted from off him. We can use material standards of measure to measure material things. We can use quantitative measures to measure a man's contribution, because that is material. But we dare not use quantitative measures to measure human beings' values as human beings in their essence. What role has this quantitative measurement got in Torah life? We see, interestingly enough, throughout the Torah, last week in the Seder was one such example, when the Torah mentions brocha, it's always measured quantitatively. You will have a great deal to eat, and the agriculture will be productive, and there will be business, and there will be rain, and there will be prosperity. It's always material prosperity. What role has this to play in a Torah life? Why is that so important? On the one hand, we're told that one can be austere, and that material things are unimportant. All that's important is our Torah and our Yerushalayim. And on the other hand, we see the Torah hammering at us every time that there's talk of blessing. What kind of blessing is it? Material blessing, physical blessing. The essence of brocha, Rav Yosher Ber Soloveitchik learns from the beginning, from Bereishis. Vayivro Elokim es ha'odom b'tzalmoi. Hashem created man in his image. B'tzelem Elokim boro iso. He created him in the image of God. So we are now talking about one of the most godly elements of the human being. Torah tells us Hashem created man in God's image. Zohar unekevo boro iso. He created them male and female. Bayavorech iso Elokim, and Hashem gave them a broche. So interesting. Two preconditions for this broche. Number one, Tzelem Elokim, they are created in the image of Hashem. Number two, male and female. And what is the bracha? Now, the Ribbono Shel Olam is about to give man the first and thus the most important bracha in the history of mankind. Man has just been created. There's Adam. And the Ribbono Shel Olam is going to give him a bracha which is going to set mankind on course. What would you think is the bracha? What kind of bracha would you ask from the Ribbono Shel Olam? If you'd just been created with a mission of founding mankind. Says the Ribbono Shel Olam, Pru Urevu Umilu Es Ha'aretz. May there be many of you. Fill the land. That's the bracha. Nothing about Yiras Shamayim, nothing about Shmiras HaMitzvahs, nothing about Torah, nothing. Just many. Quantity. Pru Urevu, be fruitful and multiply. Umilu Es Ha'aretz, and fill the land. And so it is right through Bereishis. On the botanical level, may the grasses spread out and fill the whole land with grass, giving seed, each tree producing fruit of its own kind. Again, multiplication. With the animals, be fruitful and multiply and fill the sea. In the as far as the fishes are concerned, fill the sea and let the birds multiply on the land. Interesting brachas. What's so important? How many there are? The quality is what counts, not the quantity. Who cares how many there are? You see, it bothers the Ribbono Shel Olam how many there are. It's important to him how many there are. The land must be filled. There must be quantity. There must be multiplication. It seems to go against what we normally think and what we normally talk. All that matters is the quality. Who cares how many? Not so. We see the essence of bracha revolves around quantity, not around quality. And that needs to be understood. Let us go a step further. A second medrash in today's sedra.
Also to do with the counting of the number of people and its relevance in terms of the original bracha which Hashem gave to Avraham. What was the bracha Hashem gave to Avraham? Ko yiyeh zarocho. May your seeds be like the stars of the heaven and the sand upon the earth. Quantity. The Ribbono Shel Olam wanted there to be many yidden.
Quantity is important. Again, we see in Brocha, quantity is important.
Says the Medrash, a very beautiful Medrash. When Hashem took Avraham, the Medrash learns that he didn't take him and show him the stars from here.
That there was a very important conversation going on between Hashem and Avraham. And Avraham was saying, I can see with astrology that I'll never have a child. My whole biological system and everything that the biorhythms and the astrological rhythms and everything, I can work out that I cannot have a child. Scientifically, it's not possible.
Hashem takes him outside. Eloshuhu nosun lamailo. He was taken above the stars, says the Medrash.
When it says habet, the Medrash learns that means look down from heaven, not look up at heaven. The word habet means look down. So Hashem takes him above the stars, and says to him, what does this mean? So shall be your seed. So as what? Normally we say as the number of the stars. Now the Medrash is going to let us into a different interpretation, which is going to show us that it's not all quantitative.
Amar Rabbi Levi b'shem Rabbi Yochanan, the Ma'ad of Adonia, what can this be compared to?
The Mishi Yotzol Lederech, a person goes on a journey. In those days, going on a journey, you didn't know where you were going to. There weren't hotels, there weren't good roads. It was always a very major undertaking.
V'holach yom rishon v'yom hasheni v'yom hashlishi.
Ad asoro yom. He went for 1 day, 2 days, 3 days, 10 days he's traveling. He didn't encounter a town. Pundak, he didn't encounter an inn. Ilon, he didn't find a tree. Mayim, he didn't find any water. Beria, and he didn't find a creature. Imagine what a frightening situation. There you're traveling, 10 days already, and there's no sign of life. No town, no inn, no tree, no creature. Nothing.
And after he had gone for 10 days, Sofo Ilon Echod Miroch, saw in the distance one tree. Hamashema Yesh Tacht of Mayim, this is a tree.
Water. How can a tree grow without water? Maybe there's some water there too.
Kivan Shigya Etzloi, he made his way to the tree. Metzo Oimed Al Hamayim,
he found the tree standing alongside the spring.
Kivan Sheroiso, Noson, Uferoiso, Misukonim. He saw this tree, it looked so beautiful.
Its fruit was ready. Vanof of Noim with beautiful branches.
Yoshavli, he sat down, Veniskarir Betzili, and he cooled himself off in the welcoming shade of this tree. Ochalmin Perisov, he ate some of the fruit.
We've spoken about how to appreciate the world. You've got to put yourself in a situation where you feel what it would be like if you didn't have it. This is talking about such a man for 10 days, traveling through the Karoo for 10 days, imagine. And then finally, he's got a tree with a bit of fruit and some water.
The Shosol Min Hamayon, he drank from the well, the Orevloy, and it was wonderful for him. He really enjoyed it. The Shovas Napshoyol, and his soul settled once again. He felt good. Kivan Sho'omad Lilech, it was now time to make on with his journey. Omar Le'ilon, he turned and addressed himself to the tree. Ma li levorechich. And he said, what have I to bless you with?
I can't go without giving you a brocha. What else can I give you? All I can give you is a brocha. There's nothing I can contribute to you other than a blessing. Umayishli lo imaloch. What can I say to you? That your wood should be good wood, that you should have a healthy, that you should be, the flesh of the tree should be healthy. It's good. Should I bless you that you should give forth beautiful shade? It's already beautiful. That your branches should be attractive. They're attractive already. That your fruit should be ripe. They're already sweet. They're delicious. You can't improve them. That you should have a spring coming out from among your roots. There is a spring from under your roots. That you should be standing in a good position. You're standing in a good position. What bracha can I give you? What are you lacking? Hello, but all I can say is the following. Kol hanatiyus harimdis mimcho, yiyu kamecho. All the seedlings that emanate from you should have your properties. That's my bracha to you. Is that quantitative or qualitative? What is he saying? It's both. It's that you should multiply in the same quality as your essence, as yourself. So when Hashem created the world, there were 20 generations, and there were no use. And there wasn't a tzaddik until 20 generations. Rabbi Shlom saw Avraham living in a distant land in Babylon. He tested him, threw him into the fire, and so on, and he was Mekadeshim Shemayim all the time. And so it goes on. He spreads the Rabbi Shlom's name. Hashem says, Avraham, my Yeshli loy malach. What can I say to you? My Yeshli levarachecha, what bracha can I give you? Should I bless you that you should be a tzaddik? Or that Soro should be a tzaddikis? Atos, Soro ishtecho tzaddikis lefonai. You and Soro are both tzaddikim before me. Or she you kol b'nei beisecho tzaddikim? Should I bless you that all the members of your household should be tzaddikim? Tzaddikim hem lefonai, they are. Ma yesh li levarachecho, what can I bless you with? Ela kol bonim sha'atzidim lamrid mimcho. I have only one blessing to give you, Avraham. That all the children you generate in all the generations to come should have of your essence. Shekein tziv, that's what it means when it says, Hashem said to Avraham, Koi yihye zarach. Like this, not like the stars, like you, Avraham, who's standing here above the stars, who is able to master his own destiny, who is not subject to the rules of physical laws, who is not subject to the rules of astrology. Somebody is able to elevate himself over and above those rules. You, Avraham, have it all. The only bracha I can give you is that when you generate seeds like yourself, that they're from your essence and that they're not separate from you, and that they're not different from you. That's the bracha. And in this medrash we see the essence of the meaning of a bracha and the relationship between quantity and quality in the bracha. What is quantity now? Of course quantity is important. Of course Hashem wants multiplication. Of course the pshat of the posuk must not be ignored, that after all Hashem blesses him that he should have children as many as the stars of the heaven and the sand upon the sea. Of course there's a quantitative intention. But there's a condition attached to it that we learn in this medrash. The condition is that the quantity should be born out of the quality, that it should not be separate from the quality. The quantity has to be a product of quality, not the other way around, and not separate. Not that you have quantity and you have quality. Human productivity has to come from the human essence. The human being has to use himself, has to use his talents, has to use his own special gifts, his humanity, his intellect, his personality, his character, to produce quantity. Quantity must be produced by the human being, by the human quality, and not by some form of machinery which has no connection with the inside. That's the bracha that the traveler gives the tree. That's the bracha that Hashem gives Avraham Avinu. Have many children, but koi yihye zarocha.
May your children be like you and not different to you. That's the meaning of the bracha.
And now we begin to understand why the Ribbono Shel Olam didn't create man in multitudes. The one reason Chazal gives us is that everybody should say, Bishvili Nivra Ha'olam, that the world was worthwhile being created for one man. But we need to understand that further. For after all, it wasn't just for one man. The world was created for Adam, but the intention was that Adam would have children and eventually the world would populate millions of people. So what is it? Why did Hashem start off with one and then instruct them to multiply? If Hashem loves quantity so much, why didn't He create millions to start with? The answer is Hashem likes only a certain type of quantity. He likes quantity which is generated by quality. He likes quantity which has been created by the human being, not quantity which has been imposed upon the human being. The quantity has to come from within. The quantity has to be generated like parents generate children. That's how quantity has to be generated, from within the individuals, not from without the individuals.
And that's why there is a precondition. The first precondition to the bracha was, "Vayivra Elokim es Adam b'tzalmoi, b'tzelem Elokim baroisa."
Before Hashem could give Adam the quantitative bracha, what's the condition? Godliness. What's the essence of godliness? Creativity. Unless you're a creative being, you cannot be quantitative, because I don't want that kind of quantity. I want quantity which you make. I want quantity which comes from out of your own efforts. I want quantity which is a reflection of yourselves and a product of yourselves. I want duplication. I want you to make more people like you. I don't want there just to be millions for the sake of millions, because I want the quantity to be a symbol of blessing, of bracha. Then the quantity indicates strength at the roots. If Hashem would have created millions of people, that wouldn't have shown anything. But if one man can create millions of people, that shows greatness in him. If a young man finishes university and his father says, "Right, young fellow, it's time to go and work for a living. Here, why don't you take care of these two or three companies of mine that are each worth in net asset values of excess of 10 million rand each. Take them, look after them, do what you want with them, and let's see what can be done." That's very nice, but that doesn't say anything. There is no connection between the business and the young man who's taking it over. When a young man starts with nothing, and he builds, and he sweats, and he labors, and step by step he puts it up, and he goes through all the ups, and he goes through all the downs, and at the end of several years, or of many years, he's produced something. Where does it come from? His own skills, his own efforts, his own labors. That's an expression of his own being. That was created by his own being. That's using the Tzelem Elokim. He's using his creative powers. And the quantity then is an expression of his quality, not separate from his quality. Then it becomes meaningful. A couple can adopt thousands of children. It's not the same as having their own children. What is the same as having their own children, Chazal say, is when you raise Talmidim. Because then you're putting your own creative ability into them. Then you are producing people from within yourself. It's not just a matter of physically adopting them. It's a matter of raising them with your sense of values. It's a matter of constructing them, of building them, of giving them input. And in them there is a reflection of yourself. That is like bonim. That is like children, say Chazal. So the first condition for this kind of productivity, this kind of development of quantity from quality, first condition is Tzelem Elokim. There needs to be a certain godly property there to do it the way a human being is meant to do it. Of course, animals do it too without a Tzelem Elokim, but they can only do it on a biological level. We're going to notice shortly that the human being can do it on other levels too, not only on the biological level.
The second precondition is Zochor Unekeva Boro Oitzo, that they were created male and female. That is a condition for the quantitative bracha. That if a man or a woman wants children, there need to be two parents. Not so long ago I had a lady who came to see me, and she said she has a problem. I said, "Sure, what's the problem?" She said she wants children. So I assumed that never, she can't have children, and it's a question of what she can do, and I started sympathizing with her. No, she said, "Nothing like that. No problem. I don't have a problem. I want to." "So why do you have to come to me? Tell your husband." She said, "I don't have a husband." I said, "Ah, so you don't want children, you want a shidduch. Is that what you came for?" She said, "Oh no, I don't want to get married. I want children, but I don't want to get married."
overseas, this is something which is quite widely spread. In South Africa, it was the first time that I came across it. She wants children, but she doesn't want to get married. She doesn't understand the principles. The children are the byproduct of a husband and wife relationship. There has to be a zochor unekevo in order to establish children, in order to generate quantity out of quality. If you just want children, adopt. Go to Biafra or to one of these places where there are lots and lots of children without parents and bring a few hundred thousand home. You can have as many as you want. It's not the same. It's not the same thing. You want to create the children. You want to create the children, then there's a condition. Tzelem Elokim, first condition, good. So that we're all created with a Tzelem Elokim. One further condition, Zohar and Akeva. There must be two people, and it must be male and female. Now that is a condition of physical procreation, of the biological procreation. But it goes further than that. And Rabbi Yoshe Ben Soloveitchik develops the idea that that is a condition of all procreation. Any brocha needs male and female. Any multiplication, any generation needs male and female. And the human being is capable of generating not only other people. The human being is capable of generating ideas, capable of generating concepts, of generating businesses, as we said, works of art, whatever. But there has to be a male-female relationship. But the male-female relationship doesn't have to be taken biologically, because as he points out, Chazal teras b'shor shebora HaKadosh Baruch Hu es Odom HaRishon, when the Ribbono Shel Olam created Adam HaRishon, bedu partzufin b'roi. The Ribbono Shel Olam created Adam hermaphrodite, which means inherently in every human being there are male and female properties. And so, theoretically, the human being can now achieve brocha within himself. He has male and female properties. No, says Rabbi Yoshe Ben. Earthworms also are hermaphrodite. They also have male and female properties, but you need two of them in order to make little baby earthworms. The male element of the one relates to the female element in the other, and the female element in the one relates to the male element in the one. And so says Rabbi Yoshe Ben Soloveitchik, although every human being has male and female, to become productive, your male has to attach to somebody else's female, and somebody else's female has to attach to your male, and vice versa. What does that mean? It's been often discussed. The concept of gavra and chetza, the concept of male and female. Male is the giver, female is the receiver, biologically. And that's the concept at every other level as well, emotionally, intellectually, spiritually as well. Yoshe Berg is a very simple example. A man is giving a shir. He's worked out an idea. He's presenting his idea to the shir. He's dominating the shir. They're all wrapped in attention, listening to him. Who's male, who's female? He's male, they're female. There can be productivity, there can be creativity. There's a male-female relationship, although it's only males involved. Then a bright young man in the shir puts up his hand and asks a fascinating, piercing question. And the Rosh Hashiva has to start thinking, and his mind starts working to integrate that question and to deal with it. Who's become male? Who's become female? Now the Talmud is the male, and the Rosh Hashiva has become the female. He's being dominated, he's being influenced, he's being given to, he's being fed into by the Talmud, by the student. And so the role has been reversed. And then when he's worked out his answer and he comes back again and presents his answer, back again male and female roles have been reversed. And so creative productivity is developed by the constant interchange of the male-female type. Only that way can there be brocha. When a person is on his own, or he's just as a male-male relationship, everybody's trying to give, nobody's accepting, nobody's listening, or everybody's ready to listen, nobody's willing to take the lead, then there can be no productivity, then there can be no creativity. And Rabbi Yoshe Ben comments how he's had students of very outstanding intellect and great lomdus who've never really made anything of themselves, they've stagnated. And he's had people of ordinary intellect who've become very great. And he attributes it to the fact that the former group of people often did not find themselves in an environment where they were able to challenge and be challenged. Whereas the second group of people, despite the fact that their intellects were not so great, and they weren't the greatest lomdim to start off with, but they continued growing through their own productivity, because it is necessary for there to be life and dynamicism. There has to be generation, there has to be productivity. That is the essential quality of brocha. Brocha is when quantity is generated, but it's generated from within the quality. It's not imposed upon the quality. That's something different and there's something separate. And this is something that we find applying in every area of life. When we talk about the dehumanizing of the individual, the dehumanization of the individual, what we're talking about is confusing the relationship between quantity and quality, or ignoring the relationship between quantity and quality. The example that I've given before, in the United States, if you say to somebody, I need a good doctor, is there anybody you can recommend? I say, yeah, Dr. So-and-so is the best. Are you sure he's really the best? I'm sure. How do you know? How do you know he's the best? Because he earns $400,000 a year. That's the best. The amount that one earns there is an indication of where one is, of who one is. Not just where one is, who one is. That's dehumanization. Where one sees the quantity as dominating the quality. It's the other way around. Who he is, that he's a good doctor, that one has to know independently. The fact that he earns $400,000 a year, okay, that's very nice, that's wonderful. That's nothing to be ashamed of. But that's not necessarily an indication of who he is and of what he is. And so when we find numbers and statistics being used to determine our perceptions of people, that's when we run into difficulties. When we start viewing people as faceless numbers in the statistics without personality, that's when you've got all sorts of strange emotions that develop in people. Emotions of fear, emotions of alienation, emotions of resentment. But when one looks at it differently altogether, and one evaluates people by the relationship between quantity and quality, then it becomes important. So you might find that I travel overseas and people ask me, where are you from? Johannesburg, Tucker, what do you do there? There's some address there, very nice. How many people are in it? The question is not invalid. The question is valid. Provided the questioning continues. How many people are there? What kind of people are there? What do you do with them? How does it operate? What's the purpose? What's the direction? What's the goal? Then one can work out some kind of relationship between quantity and quality. If one says, Beis HaMidrash is a wonderful Beis HaMidrash. Highest standards in the whole country. It's absolutely outstanding. And they say, how many Talmidim? You change the subject. They're wonderful. How many Talmidim have you got? We don't actually have any at the moment. No, we don't have any at the moment. What does that mean? You've got wonderful standards, but you don't have any at all. There's a barrier. The quality is not being translated into quantity, which means there's something wrong with the brocha aspect. It's not developing outwards. It's not alive. It's not dynamic. If one says, it's a wonderful Beis HaMidrash, thousands of people come. And then the questioner says, and what's their standard? You change the subject again. Thousands of people will keep up the subject all the time of standard. That's also not brocha. That's dehumanizing. That's converting quality into quantity. Quality can't be converted into quantity. And quantity can't be confused with quality. But nor are they unrelated. Quality is important because that is the essence. Quantity is important because that is the measure of the dynamics and the vitality. If there is growth, there is life. If there is not growth, there is not life. The baker might have been a good baker, but he was destined to die. There was no dynamics in his vision. He didn't see growth. He didn't portray growth. He had no vision of growth. His vision stopped at the birds eating on top of the basket. Not so the battler. The battler in the midst of depression, in a hopeless situation, in a jail out of which nobody has ever come alive. He still has a vision. What does he dream of? His dream is of a growing vine with blossoms, with branches, with full bunches of grapes, a glass which he's squeezing the grapes into and producing wine in the midst of despair. He's dreaming productivity. That's where there's greatness. You know the famous story of the Ponovizhirov when he miraculously found himself the only member of his family saved from the Holocaust. He happened to be in Switzerland on his way to America when news got to him that his town had been wiped out and destroyed and that Lithuanian Jewry was in the process of being destroyed. And there he was. There was no point in him continuing to America because the purpose of his mission to America was to negotiate the transfer of refugees from Lithuania to America. And Lithuania was just wiped out, so he decided there's no point in going to America. From Switzerland he went to Israel. And what did he do there? The whole Torah world had just been exterminated. There was nothing. Few odd individuals here and there. He had a vision. Build a Torah city on a dump of sand out there in Bnei Brak. That's productivity. He didn't decide, well, where's the biggest Torah community? Yerushalayim? Let me go and live in Yerushalayim and look after myself and just live out till the end of my days there. Let me find some chavrusas, let me find a few talmidim and sit and learn. That wasn't his vision. In the midst of despair, the man had just lost everybody he had and everybody he loved. The Torah world had just been wiped out. He picks a heap of sand outside Tel Aviv where there was nothing. And he has a vision of a massive yeshiva, of people living there, of young people coming to learn, generations to be established. And if he didn't have that vision, God forbid, who knows what would have been the result, whether anything would ever have been established. The Byron Kotler comes to America, has a vision. What's his vision? America, there was, the atmosphere was so hostile to terrorists beyond imagination. When a few years before that, Rabbi Chonon Wasserman came to America, and to greet him and raise funds for the yeshiva, they arranged a ball, a mixed dance. And they were most offended when he said, sorry, of a major yeshiva, big, powerful, many Talmidim. What are we going to say? Ponder Vizhirov was obsessed with quantity? The Baron Kotler was obsessed with quantity? Sure they were! That was the life force that linked us, that was all we had that linked us to the original generation. It was that on which we drew everything that we've got today. Because Baruch Hashem, there were a few individuals who in the midst of despair had this vision of growth and development and dynamism. And if you would have asked them logically, Ponovizhirov, is it logical that there should be a yeshiva here? He would have had to answer no. Absolutely illogical. And if you would have asked about in Kotli, is it logical that in Lakewood you should be able to establish a power of Torah, a powerhouse of Torah, which today has established branch yeshivas throughout the United States and in other parts of the world too, which has produced Rosh Yeshivas and Rabbonim throughout the world, and likewise Ponovitch Yeshiva, which set the style and the pace and the standard for the entire post-Second World War Torah world? Is it logical? Of course not. They had visions. The vision was one of Brocha, not restricted, constrained, closed. Open up, big, growth, dynamics, development, vitality. But not at the sacrifice of quality. That all has to be as a result and feeding on uncompromised quality. And Ponovizhirov made no compromise in his standards of education to satisfy the masses. There was no entertainment in the yeshiva. There was no lowering of standards. There had to be the dream of quantity, but it has to be quantity of brocha. And quantity of brocha means generation. It has to come out of himself with his qualities. That's what he has to produce. Rabbi Aaron Kotler is the epitome of uncompromising Torah Yiddishkeit. Absolutely no compromise, not of intellectual standard, not of observant standard, not of philosophical standard. He made no concessions whatever to the United States. Other yeshivas were already allowing secular studies to take place at night, part-time, because that was the only way to get Talmidim. Nobody would go to yeshiva full-time. The Byron Kotler had a vision. Quantity without the sacrifice of quality. Because if there's brocha, the quantity comes from inside. And if there's no brocha, it doesn't help having quantity. Quantity has to be a function of brocha. Quantity has to be a product of the inside. Quantity has to be a product of the quality inside. And that's really what we do every Motzei Shabbos with Havdolah. Simon Brocha. Havdolah, the whole of Havdolah, the theme of Havdolah is one of Brocha. And what do we do? So you can have some idiot who doesn't understand the meaning of Havdolah. He just sees that your cup full with a mess in the saucer. So he delicately fills his cup to nearly the top. Not quite the top because he doesn't want it to mess on his hand when he holds it. And then he pours some into the saucer as well. And you say, that's not the way to do it. Because why not? The effect is the same. The effect is not the same. The wine in your saucer doesn't come from the cup. It's true there's wine in the saucer. It's true there's more wine in your saucer than in anybody else's saucer. You're really machmir in this business. You don't use a saucer, you use a dish. And you've filled your dish with wine. And you've nearly filled your glass with wine. Whereas I fill my glass and it runs over just a little bit. But mine is the right way and yours is the wrong way. Because in your case, the quantity is unconnected with the essence. It doesn't come from your cup. Quantity has to flow over. When the cup is full and you carry on pouring, that's when it flows over. That's when it becomes valuable quantity. That's when it becomes quantity attached to the essence and attached to the source. And that can only come through the challenging relationship of male and female. Biological brocha can come through the challenging relationship biologically and emotionally between husband and wife. And intellectually and spiritually, such productivity can only come from the challenging relationship of male and female between two colleagues, between a Talmid and a Rebbe, between chavrusas, between people who are learning. The Torah is only nikneis bechabura. One of the ways one acquires Torah is bechabura, among groups of people, because that's where there's dynamics, that's where there's challenge, that's where there's question and answer. We learned on the Friday morning, ladies, derech Hashem shir, that Hashem has a funny way of operating. Although He knows the truth in every situation, of course, and a human being does something and that action has to be evaluated and judged, Hashem at a glance immediately knows all the ins and outs of that action. But that's not the way He operates. Explains the Derech Hashem, Malchusu da'aro te'in Malchusu da'rakia. Government in the world down here, physical, political government, follows the same system as government in Hashem's world. He too has parliaments and tricameral parliaments. It wasn't the creation of South Africa. He's got also many different parliaments and Sanhedrins, and he's got courts, higher courts and lower courts, bigger courts and smaller courts. And every action is debated and discussed and argued out in those courts. And somebody sits in the chair. Sometimes it's the Ribbono Shel Olam himself, and sometimes it's an appointee of the Ribbono Shel Olam. And the one who's sitting in the chair doesn't involve himself in the discussion. He just listens. And he produces his decision as a consequence, as a result of the debating backwards and forwards. On his right, he puts all those who are for. On his left, he puts all those who are against. And he allows everybody to speak their bit and to argue for and to argue against. And we can ask, if it's an appointee of the Ribbono Shel Olam, we understand why this argument has to take place. But if the Ribbono Shel Olam himself is sitting in the chair, why does he have to go through the charade? He knows exactly what is. He knows exactly what it's all about and how it needs to be judged. What's the purpose of the whole charade? The Ribbono Shel Olam teaches us this thing, that everything has to be produced out of challenge. Everything has to be produced out of give and take. Out of taking the raw material and using it and arguing with it. Even though you know beforehand how it's going to be. The way that Ribbono Shel Olam wants it is to be the consequence of intercourse. He wants physical productivity to be the consequence of physical intercourse. He wants emotional productivity to be the consequence of emotional intercourse. He wants mental productivity to be the result of mental intercourse. He wants people interrelating. Well, we spoke last week about communication. It's only through the meaningful interrelationship, challenging, asking, answering, questioning, that there can be productivity, that there can be originality, that there can be creativity in a way which is consequent to the essence, in a way which flows out from the essence and remains attached to the essence. The effort has to be put into the quality. You put the wine in the saucer not by pouring the wine in the saucer. You pour wine into the cup. But you pour and you pour and you pour. And you pour far beyond the limits of the cup to hold. It doesn't matter. You fill the quantity, you fill the container up. That's the male. The container is the female. And through the relationship in between, what happens? The container gets filled up. And you carry on pouring. And then the container begins to overflow. It overflows quantitatively. It overflows producing far more than it's able to contain. It's a mayan of mayim chayim. It becomes a spring of living water, of dynamic water, bubbling up and continuing.
That is the consequence of quality that produces quantity, the essence of the Torah's bracha.